I hope you can tune in for the rest of the show. It will be a book review, which I go through about once a month, and cover a couple of chapters each time I go through this book. And the book is called Revolutionary Psychology. So if it's the first time that you've tuned in and interested in what the book is, that's its title. It's written by the founder of the modern Gnostic movement, Samael Onvior. Now, last month we covered chapters 11 and 12. Oh, sorry, no. Chapters 9 and 10, which was the different eyes and the beloved ego. And essentially, just to, as a review of those topics, the fact that within us there are lots of different eyes or different parts of ourselves. Essentially, we're not one person. But we're many people with conflicting desires, conflicting wants, different thoughts, different emotions. And each of these different desires stems from what we call a variety of different egos that we have. And this ego, we become very attached to it. So for better or for worse, whether they're good egos or bad egos, destructive ones, we get attached to them, and then we become trapped in a certain way of thinking, feeling and behaving. And so part of this book is to really try to understand ourselves to a greater depth. And in some ways, some of the stuff could be repetitive and the chapters overlap each other. But really, you can read this stuff multiple times and still not fully comprehend the reality of what these teachings are and what they're trying to show us about ourselves. And that's really where the central point of this work is to better know ourselves, and hence to know other people as well, because we're all very similar in our psychology and how it is constructed, you could say, and how it operates within us. And so in this book reviews, we want to go deeper in understanding the psychology with the hope that it gives us a better understanding of the esoteric reality or the spiritual reality, which is, they go hand in hand, which we've mentioned before on the show. So now the topics for tonight are chapters 11, which is called Radical Change, and chapter 12, which is The Observer and Observed. And we'll start with chapter 11, Radical Change. So when we want to change radically, it implies that we need something of a radical approach or some real impacting realization. And so this is the fact that we are not one person. We are many. We are multiple. It's called the doctrine of the multiple eyes. As long as we keep thinking that we are one unity, then we're not going to really be able to change, because we can't, because not comprehending the different parts of ourselves, when we are not going to be able to change from that, because we don't know what's really going on at a deeper level in our psychology. The key to change, therefore, is to realize those different aspects of ourselves, and to realize them in an intimate way, to realize how they affect us, how they affect the centers of our body, of our mind, of our emotions. But also we want to understand how the way we are affects other people, because this is really important, especially in the quality of our relationships. If we're behaving in very unconscious manners, in unconscious ways, then we're not going to be understanding the repercussions on other people, and that's going to cause a certain result, and then we're going to be attracting the same circumstances and doing the same things, which may most likely not be something that we want in our life. So I really need to know, what are these elements within us that are causing these things to happen? There, so as mentioned many times, within us there's many different types of thoughts or ways of thinking, different ways that we feel at different times of the day, and different ways that we behave. And I think we all realise that in different parts of the day we feel different ways. Like maybe if we're a morning person, we're feeling at our peak when we get up, the mind is fresh and we have, you know, quite a high level of tolerance. But towards the end of the day, we our body maybe doesn't cope very well. We get tired and therefore we're more prone to irritability and to stress. So in these ways, we can have a rough idea of, you know, when our better time of the day is or when our more energetic time of the day is. But really, we want to know what are these factors that are causing these fluctuations and changes. Going to a deeper level, like say, for example, our anger. When do we feel the most angry or stressed? When do we feel fear if we're prone to panic attacks? When do these arise? So really understanding the particular circumstances that bring these elements within us is going to be really helpful to understanding them, and especially to liberate ourselves from that trapped behaviour. We really need to understand what's going inside of us if we want to change our lives for the better, which is a big part of the work. We want to improve ourselves, improve our quality of life, our relationships, and be happier overall. Now, there's a really interesting quote from Socrates that says, not only do we not know, but we don't know that we don't know. And so there are a lot of things that we are ignorant to in our life. Whether we choose to stay ignorant or wake up is a choice that we all have. Now, a lot of people choose to stay in ignorance, and whilst they may not know that they don't know, the things they do know keeps them going and happy enough in their life. But when we are on the path of knowledge, we have to realise first and foremost that there is a lot that we don't know. And even the things that we do know, we might start to question the truth, the reality of that knowledge. Now, in regards to ourselves, we're not going to be able to work on those things that cause difficulty in our life if we don't know what they are, of course. If we don't know ourselves, if we don't know how it is exactly that we're causing problems to ourselves and other people. So we need to start to observe this within ourselves. And it can be very difficult because it's hard to really see ourselves for what we are. And most of us still have our friends and our family that will, you know, even if we can be difficult to be around, they still accept us as who we are. So there are, it's not all doom and gloom when we really start to look within ourselves. Now, it says in the book, it's not just about learning how to acquire good manners and behaviours. So it's not just about learning how to be nice to people and pushing down all those elements within ourselves, all those desires that come up. We think, oh, if we're on the way to work and we're getting angry and we think, oh, you know, I've just got to be nice. And so we just deal with it on a surface level and have a pleasant personality. It's not just about that. Although it's nice to have good manners and be well behaved, to know what to say and when to say it, it can also hide what we really are beneath the surface. And this is what we want to start to uncover, to go deeper in the knowledge of ourselves, beyond just the surface personality and surface way of being, because that's where the real information is that we want, or else we will be pleasant and superficial for the rest of our lives, which is also nice too. I'm not saying we shouldn't be pleasant people, but yeah, we've got to know what is in ourselves. Now, this type of work where we want to know ourselves better in a deeper way, beyond superficialness, beyond the personality, It requires a very particular and personal effort from us. And this is a real, you could say it's an art, but it's where we have to put in a special work, a special effort. Because no one, as I mentioned before, wants to see themselves as imperfect, as blemishes, or have any weaknesses. Even though we all have them, still it's really difficult to actually acknowledge them, to see them and to acknowledge them within us. But it requires a real motivation to want to know ourselves better, and a strength and a maturity, I think, first and foremost. But when our essence or our consciousness is ready to go deeper and to work with the awakening, then we'll know it, because nothing superficial that we see in life is going to make us, comfort us or appease us. We're always going to want to know more and more. And so our own source of motivation comes from within. Now, it says in the book, no human being can do this work for us. This is an interesting point. If people were to point out our defects to us, we would probably soon come to dislike them. Even if we are interested in knowing ourselves, if someone's always pointing out our errors, it's actually quite difficult to experience. And, of course, it depends on how well they do it. It's always helpful when people are honest with us, I think, because sometimes you don't often find people that can just say it how it is. But, if it's happening all the time, it can have an opposite effect. Likewise, we can't always be pointing out other people's defects to them. I think if we've ever tried that, we realise that it's tricky, and the reaction is, can be an uncomfortable one. When we make this choice to know ourselves, and hence to know other people, we can only do it for the sake of knowing ourselves. We can't expect other people to want to do the same or want to see themselves in the same light and want to go deeper. And I think all of us who are seekers of knowledge will find this. Not everyone wants to go as deep into the mysteries of life and the mysteries of death, and even into the mysteries of our mind and our psychology, because it takes work. The reward is great. The things that we get from knowing ourselves are just really quite amazing. But we need to put in this energy, this work, to be able to get something out of it. And often we don't see that straight away. So it can be a bit disheartening to be always seeing these and digging and looking within ourselves and not getting any rewards from it straight away. But they do come, and most often when we least expect it. So there's an interesting teaching that the author goes through in this book, and it says that we can hear these teachings and accept that we have a multiplicity of egos, a multiplicity of errors within us. But then, and we accept it, and we say, okay, yeah, I'm full of different egos. I've got lots of them, anger and pride and fear and greed and all that. And then we don't observe them. We don't study them. We don't learn about them and how to liberate these things within us. And it says that this, in a way, can be an evasion or an escape. And, yeah, it stops us from actually seeing ourselves. So we all have this tendency to accept certain teachings, and particularly that there are multiple egos within us. It's very easy for this to discard and to not go deeper, to keep it at the intellectual level and to accept it as a teaching and somewhat as a belief. Like, oh yes, I believe that, you know, there's more than one vested interest or investor, you could say, in our psychology, but then keep it at that intellectual level and not go deeper and to really observe it and comprehend it. And so we all need to watch out for this in these teachings, because it can quite easily happen. The other thing is we form a lot of knowledge about this thing called the ego, but we never really observe it. So whilst we might know a lot about its behaviours and how it works in a very general sense, we lack the actual direct observation of anger when it is in our human machine. So we miss those valuable moments of observing the anger when we're on our way to work and someone cuts us off, and observing how we feel, at the state of our body, how we're holding our body, and the thoughts that go through. So this is all observing the ego in the act. So we need to develop the technique or the discipline to observe without evasions, without distractions. We need to also really stop blaming others for our behaviour, because when we are unhappy with something in life, our first thought is to blame other people for it, or blame other circumstances. Like if I had a better job, or if I had a better manager or something, then I would be happier in my work. Or if my partner did something differently, then I would be a happier person. And this is a real distraction, you could say. It's kind of really difficult to bring it back to ourselves, but that is part of the work that we need to do. Not let the external circumstances govern what's going on within ourselves. And that what happens outside of us is determined by what's going on inside of us. So we need to understand the need to look within. So yes, it mentions that, again, to accept that we have multiple conflicting egos within us and observing it are different things. We need to take it from a theory and observe it within us, to give ourselves that time, that internalization and that retrospection, to be able to actually see ourselves and see this teaching in process. Not just accept it as, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense, but to really work to observe it in our life. And the goal is that we change. So we have that radical change in our life. And that's the point we have the power to change, because we see that who we are is not one solid entity. It's like multiple. So therefore in that way, you could say it's easier to work on ourselves, because we can break it up into smaller bits. So there are many different beliefs, different theories, different ideologies, faiths, religions in around the world and around the place. It says that these different theories and beliefs, they can also distract us. So we fill ourselves up with lots of information on different topics, and then we don't really look at ourselves. And it's something that I think we all can do very easily, because it's kind of easier to just read about interesting stuff and theories than it is to actually look at ourselves. And that's where all the knowledge that we want about life is held. I like the saying that says our religion is like an opiate for the masses. And it's not just religions, but a lot of different beliefs and theories can be just keep us asleep to a certain state, to keep to the world or the mind of beliefs, where we just have a belief but we don't really go deeper and to turn that belief into like something real and tangible that gives us the faith and the confidence to make something of our lives. It says what is fundamental is to perceive, to experience and to comprehend. And it's quite difficult to say this and mean it, because it implies that we can't be certain of ourselves. So if we see that we are multiple entities or fractionated consciousness within us, it's kind of, it can be a bit unnerving, because then it's like, well, what is the real part of me? So we have the real part of ourself, which is our essence. we have a very small amount of free essence. The rest of it is trapped in the ego. So we need to start to rely on that free essence that we have. And meditation can help us to build on that essence. We'll just go to a music break, and then we'll come back to the next part of the book. And you're back on the Gnostic Waves. And that was a track from the CD Handel for Meditation, Air in G Minor. And we'll actually be using tracks from this CD for the meditation practice a bit later. Now, before the music break, I was talking about the essence, which is like the real part of ourself and thing that we all have. We often relate it to children, like small children have their essence very much more awakened and active within them. And so you can see that, and you can perceive the essence or the elementals in nature a lot easier. It can be difficult to perceive that in other humans, but yeah, it's definitely there, and it's something that we all have. Now we'll do a practice based on that essence. The next chapter is called The Observer and the Observed, and it starts off by explaining what are the hindrances to seeing ourselves as we really are, as in like a multiplicity within us and not a unity. And I think, to speak generally, it's a pride. It's that sense of self, and we identify or we see ourselves as one. Even though we have so many different thoughts that go in our head during the day, we still see that thinker as one thinker, when it's actually a lot of different thinkers. But yeah, something interesting to reflect on. There's also different aspects of pride, that we may have delusions of grandeur. We think that we are a god or godlike. There's also self-worship, believing in a permanent I or in a permanent ego or a type of alter ego. There's aspects where we think we know it all. So we think, yeah, we know everything. We know everything we need to. There's self-sufficiency, vanity, and mystical pride. So all these things give a lot of weight, give a lot of strength to the eye of pride, and therefore we trust in that completely. And I, you know, in my own reflections of my own life, we can rely on that pride to get us through a lot in life, but it's not indestructible, you could say. Like, all it takes is a very difficult circumstance or a traumatic event, maybe a death of a relative, or, you know, a relationship that hasn't worked out, or some other illness or sickness, and we lose that foundation. So it's not something that's permanent, even though when we're in the circumstances, we might think it is. If everything goes well, then of course we can rely on those very strong egos. But as soon as something doesn't, then can be like flawed. And so really we need to find that true center of gravity that's not based on things that are finite and things that are related or reliant on particular circumstances or particular things happening, because we probably have a very little control over those things in our current state of consciousness in life. So if we keep thinking of ourselves as one, we're never going to truly be able to separate and see ourselves as distinct from these elements within us. We're not going to be able to separate the observed from the observer. And this is why the chapter that we went through before is essential, because if we see ourselves as one, we're always going to be identified with ourselves a certain way, and we'll be like, oh, this is who I am, and we're not going to be able to separate from that. And separation actually is the key point to this chapter, or this is how I see it anyway, my interpretation. the separation from any one of those conditioned elements within us is what is key. Now, it says that whoever accepts that we are many within us and sees it, so based on self-observation, is able to comprehend that each desire, each thought, each action, each passion has a corresponding ego. So when we start to see ourselves that we're not one, we're not united, that we have many contradictions, and we start to get a bit of separation, well, at the start it's observation, and then when we can really look at ourselves objectively, we start to get that separation, and we see that we can trace each of these desires, thoughts, and feelings, and hence the behaviours that follow, we can trace them back to a particular ego, and one that we really are attached to or love. And that's what we covered last time on the book review, the beloved ego. We are really attached to it. And when we start to see this and want to separate from it, we find it very difficult, because it's like a long lost friend. If we understand the ego is continually projecting thoughts, our thoughts, whether we realize it or not, are somewhat of a comfort to us. They're like, they are a part of us, so much so that we have very, very great difficulties separating from our thoughts. And we see that in meditation practice. So it's kind of like our, you could say, a subliminal background noise that's always going on. So when we work to separate from it, it's like difficult, because it's that the way our mind has been functioning for so long has been in the same way, and when we go to change it in quite a radical way, then these egos aren't really going to be that happy. And yeah, it's a very interesting study when we start to separate from our thoughts and our feelings, and particularly the really big ones, like the big angers and the big fears. It's a real feat of work to be able to fully separate them. But slowly, we do this work, and it's not going to all happen overnight or in a week or in 3 months. So this is a lifetime of observation, separation, and elimination. And but we all have to start somewhere, and any bit we can do is going to be super helpful for ourselves and everyone that we live with or coexist with. So yes, when we start to observe ourselves, we end up dividing between the observer and the observed. And as said, we're not going to get far with this separation if we keep getting identified with the processes of the ego and think it's ourselves. So we need to actually realize that these desires that we have, the desire to eat food or indulge in a habit, like if we have a problem, smoking, alcohol, drugs, that this desire, it's not us. The desire exists, but we are not that. If we keep having thoughts that torment us, like recurring thoughts or recurring fears. I know fear is very good at projecting undesirable events in, I don't know why, in the trying to prepare us for things, but events never are quite as fear presents it to us. So then we say, no, this fear isn't the reality. It is a possibility, sure, but it's not a reality. And, try and work on it slowly. Fear is difficult, because it gets in the instinctive center very much. And it's hard to separate from instinctive reactions as well. I mean, each of the egos has an instinctive counterpart to it. But, some are probably going to be trickier than for us and others. And just on a basic level, you can see differences in people's psychologies that, like for me, I have been able to overcome fear to a certain level to be able to talk on the radio show. I'm not saying it wasn't there, and I'm not saying it's gone forever. There's still that fear that exists, but it's to the extent that it can be overcome. Whilst there's people that I've talked to that would just cannot see past that fear to be able to talk, and don't think that ever will, and they don't need to. I'm not saying they do, but it's just that the way that fear manifests is different. So in all of us, whilst we all have fear and anger, and that the way it manifests for each of us is quite unique for us, and the level and the strength of those egos. So if we're having feelings that really like hurt the heart, then we start to say, no, this is not my true emotional state. This is like a temporary, fleeting emotional reaction. And so we start with these teachings and in a way use them as affirmations. But we gain evidence, we gain comprehension that when we have a panic attack, it doesn't last forever, does it? It's kind of isolated to a particular event and circumstance. So we know we're not always that. And so why do we identify with that fear when it only takes up a certain, you could say, percentage of our reality? And that's the thing with these egos, is each of them on their own hold a certain amount of our consciousness trapped. And maybe altogether they keep us totally asleep. But when we separate them, we can start to awaken the consciousness that is trapped within each of them. So it says that whosoever takes all of his psychological processes as functionalisms of their individual and permanent identity has identified with all their errors, all their egos, and they've tied themselves to that and have lost their capacity to separate. And when we do this, then we cannot change. Then we are what we are, and people think, well, you know, I am what I am. And of course we're not going to be able to change if we just see ourselves in that way. But if we see ourselves separate from these elements within us, then we're going to be able to change, because we know it's not us. It just identifies it takes over our consciousness for a certain part of our day, of our reality, but not all of it. And then in that respect, we can actually work on that. So we'll just go to another short music break, and then we'll do a short practice. Classical music is always very nice to meditate to. Starting by relaxing the body. Finding that position that's going to be comfortable for us. During that process of relaxation, we focus our attention. It can be on the music, it can be on the breath, in the heart. Finding that way, that rhythm that we get into the meditation practice. Trying not to get distracted in the mind, just having as our focus, relaxing the body, relaxing the emotions, and very naturally the mind follows suit and relaxes. when we are relaxed, it's easier to connect with the essence within, the free consciousness. Trying to perceive that within us. It's not a mental process, it's just focusing on that purest form of energy within us. It can be our vibration. Hard to explain in words, but trying to connect with that essential nature within. That essence is the observer. If we can form our meditation practice from that center of gravity within, we will be able to observe. We start by observing the thoughts, observing them come in and go out. Not identifying with any of them. We are not our thoughts. We are not our thoughts. We can't stop them coming in, but we can let them go straight away. We can keep them moving, not detain them in the mind, not give them our energy or our concentration. Of course, we could continue the rest of the practice doing this exercise. But we're going to work with this separation for something specific. We want a manifestation of an ego. We want to observe it from the point of view of the essence. And we want to see that it's not us, it's not our true self. We want to separate from it, not identify with it, but observe it. So now spending some time finding that particular occurrence. It could have been today, it could have been another day. It could be a small event, it could be a major drama. We see that event. Can we see the before, during, and after? Or if this is too challenging, we just observe what we can. See if there are any other players in this drama, in this event. See how it is that we felt. Whether it was anger or fear or laziness or pride. We thought we were right. Thought we were justified. What were the thoughts that were going on at that time? Trying to recollect them, but realizing that we were, these thoughts were not really our thoughts. At this stage, we don't want to reject anything. We just want to observe. And not identify. We are not these emotions, we are not these thoughts. The behaviour that results, well, we're not really that behaviour, but we do have to take responsibility for it. We could say this is not our natural behaviour. And there are other answers to the problems that we have. There are other ways of behaving. But of course our behaviour is dictated by our emotions and our thoughts, so we really need to understand these. we lose our attention, our focus, bringing it back to our essence, whatever we perceive that to be. The better we connect with the essence, the better we're going to be observing those aspects within ourselves that cause us difficulties, cause contradictions and cause us not to feel inner peace or serenity. A short while we'll be finishing the practice, trying to really imprint in your memory the feeling of the essence, the vibration of the essence, because that is our best friend in the meditation practice and in the self-observation. It truly sees things in a way that the mind and the trapped essence can't really see as well. All right, well, thank you for joining me on the show tonight. That's all we have time for.